Yes, welcome on into First Pitch, a production of the Inside Baseball Podcast Network. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby, MLB writer for Athlon Sports, joined by Christian Rau, managing editor of InsideTheCardinals.com. And Christian, a lot of stuff happened over the weekend in MLB. I think, trades, the trade deadline kind of getting going. We're going to have a whole big trade deadline show tomorrow because the deadline is tomorrow at 6 p.m. But one of the big ones that stood out to me was Jazz Chisholm to the Yankees. I thought this was interesting because there's a lot of options they can do with him, right? They can plug him into center field in place of Aaron Judge. They can play him at second. They indicated they might play him at third. But last night, you see him bat fifth, playing center field. What's your impressions of this trade? Was this, I guess, the right choice of who should go to New York? And did Miami do a good job, you think, of getting a return for him?
Yeah, well, first of all, what an amazing weekend of baseball. And you're right, there's a lot to cover. Way too much to cover in 20 minutes here on First Pitch. But when you're talking about Jazz Chisholm, I'm not sure if he's the complete perfect player for the Yankees when you look at some of the other choices that were out there, but he's going to fit quite well in the lineup where you put him. Now, they're saying he's going to be in the middle of the lineup guy. I don't know if that's the right choice. I think he deserves to be at the top of the lineup. He's a leadoff guy. I don't know if deserves the right one, but I think he serves better as a leadoff guy for the Yankees. We saw what he did in Miami without protection, without having guys like Aaron Judge and Juan Soto and doing well at the leadoff spot. I thought it was funny that he got his debut on a Sunday because Jazz Chisholm rakes on Sundays. He didn't get a home run on Sundays this time. He did start off really good for the Yankees, though. The way that he ended the game, a single, had a stolen base, came in by a sac fly by no other than DJ LeMahieu. So I like what's happening with Jazz Chisholm so far. He looked like he did okay in center field. The interesting part to me, though, Lindsey, will be they're talking about him possibly playing third base. I know you were looking at his arm strength a little bit. I don't know how that's going to translate. We've never seen him do that in MLB.
Yeah, he's always been shortstop, second base, center field. Has never, I believe even in the minors, never made a start at third base. And so definitely interesting. You do think that, I think he could be at least average. Going to be a little bit of growing pains. It's a little bit of a different kind of experience there at third base. He's got the arm strength for it. He's got the range for it. But I think the bigger thing, no matter where you play him on the field, center field, second, third, whatever, I do think that eventually you're going to see him at leadoff. He talked about when he was in Miami, he talked to the media about how you treat leadoff differently from batting third, batting fourth, batting fifth. And he seems to put up good numbers as a leadoff hitter. I could definitely see them eventually moving him up there. Anthony Volpe is now tenured over Jazz Chisholm, so I understand why you would leave him at leadoff and not mess that up. But eventually, it feels like getting him on base in front of Judge and Soto is probably going to have to be your priority. And in the meantime, just real quick, I know we have to move on, but the return here, catcher Augustin Ramirez, infielder Jared Serna, and utility player Abrahan Ramirez. I getting Augustin Ramirez, the Marlins have struggled at catcher ever since they got rid of JT Realmuto. Like, they have not been able to find competence for more than a couple weeks at a time at the catcher position. So questions about his defense, about, can he be an above average backstop? He may not stick behind the plate, but either way, 22-year-old catcher, he's hit 20 home runs between, I think it was a double A and triple A this year. Whether or not it's first base or catcher, it's a higher ceiling that you haven't seen the Marlins really have in some of these guys. And I think it's a good move overall.
No, I agree. And then if you talk about adding him plus the De Los Santos from the AJ Puck trade, you're getting two power bats that are now sitting in triple A waiting for that next step, that 2025 plan. I don't know, Lindsey, between what's happened so far, I might be excited about what Peter Bendix is doing with Miami. And I think I just said the quiet part out loud.
Yeah, it really feels like, unlike that Luis Arraez trade, and I think we mentioned this last week, but it feels like the Marlins are finally going for a little bit of ceiling over floor with some of these guys. EDLS has a huge ceiling. Davidson De Los Santos could hit 35 home runs in the bigs. He could also bat 100 with a 40% strikeout rate. So, like, it's risky, but there's ceiling there, whereas so many of the guys they had acquired in earlier deals and in the offseason under Bendix were very much fringes of the roster or floor-raising guys who could make you a little bit more competent on offense, but they weren't ever going to be stars on a playoff team. So I like what they're doing there. Talking about trades real quick, the Rays and Cubs have had some interesting trade deadlines. I guess Cubs first, they go out and get Isaac Paredes from the Tampa Bay Rays. I've got a little bit of question about the fit. A guy who is probably the most extreme pull hitter in baseball. Every single one of his 69 career home runs have been to left or left center. He's literally never gone opposite field with a home run. And moving to Wrigley Field, it's not the worst ballpark for him because Baltimore exists, Baltimore out there, but it's not ideal. He loses, I think it's 30 or 40 feet at the foul pole. And the StatCast tells us his home run, his career home runs would have gone down significantly had he played all his games in Wrigley versus Tampa Bay or somewhere else. I would have loved to see him in Houston, but I guess what is your thought about that, getting Nate Pearson from the Blue Jays and kind of what the Cubs are doing at this deadline?
Yeah, going from Wrigley to Tropicana, that's 355 to 314, so 41 feet difference over at left field. So you're right, it's going to be a huge change, especially for a pull hitter like Paredes. When you look at this trade, at first, I was sending things in the chat to you when this happened. I was telling me, like, help me make this make sense. I didn't really understand what was going on, why they were making this trade. The Cubs, I still can't decide. Are they buyers? Are they sellers? I think they're a little bit of in between. I know Jeff Passan came out with a tweet saying, you know, let's read between the lines. It's not binary, all that good stuff. But, man, I'll tell you what. When I looked at this trade, the first thing that came to my mind was not Isaac Paredes, was not Christopher Morel. It was Hunter Bickey. That guy coming over in the trade, yeah. For some reason, Tampa's going to be all over that guy. He screams Tampa Bay Rays. He screams like he's going to be a perfect fit for them. He's got a great four-pitch mix already. You find a way to just add in a little bit more, help his fastball out. I think Tampa's going to unlock him. But when you look at Morel, you look at Paredes, they have the same amount of control. They're the same age. It's almost like a change of scenery. But as you mentioned, the pole thing is really interesting for what they're going to do at Wrigley. It's almost like Hoyer went for the production now instead of the potential in the future of Morel.
Right. And I like the idea for Tampa Bay of we can go and we can stick Morel into the DH spot. He's been below average defensively everywhere he's played. He's played at third base almost exclusively when he's not DH this year. And like out of all qualified defenders, he is literally the worst defender in baseball per StatCast, per outs above average. So you can get him out of the field. You can also promote Junior Caminero to third base, which is an upgrade over just about any third baseman in the league from a power perspective and a potential perspective. He could be a star. So I like that. And then looking at some of these other deals they made, I mean, you trade Zach Eflin. They trade Randy Arozarena. I feel like they've done a really, really good job of getting guys that you could see being impact major leaguers. Getting they got Dylan Lesko from the Padres for Jason Adam. 15th overall pick in 2022. He had Tommy John surgery after getting drafted. The control has not come back after Tommy John, but he's very much the profile of a guy that the Rays can fix. They're amazing at developing pitching. I think the only... like, this reminds me of the Blake Snell deal. They got Luis Patino. And again, that's with the Padres, December 2020. They did not figure out fixing Patino. But it feels like a lot more of this can be done. Homer Bush Jr. came over in that trade, really promising young outfielder. I mean, they don't have a lot of catchers in the system. JD Gonzalez, 18-year-old catcher. It's a flyer, but you never know. I really think that they've done a good job of getting cheaper at the major league level, which we know the Rays have to do, and then getting impact talent, which is not something a lot of other teams have been able to say they've done in this deadline to the extent the Rays have.
Yeah, and the majority of those players, unlike the Cubs and Rays trade, the Morel trade, but the majority of the other trades are all players that have a lot of control, as you mentioned, but don't but also don't have to be added to the 40-man roster, which
that's is always big for Tampa Bay.
Huge for the Tampa Bay Rays, exactly. So they're going to save a lot of money. It's exactly what they need to do. And I find that they're going to find a way to succeed, as they always do, with an even lower payroll and get themselves out of this financial scrutiny that they're in this year.
Yeah, we're going to talk more about the trade deadline tomorrow. Might actually kind of preview some of the biggest names left on the board as we get into the final day of the trade deadline. So subscribe to the channel, like this video, be there for all of it. Talking about other teams that have done well, that kind of represented well and have had things work out for them. The Philadelphia Phillies, okay, 8.5 games up in the East. They're taking advantage of a rare down year for Atlanta. And look at what happened over the weekend, right? Tyler Phillips, a 2015 16th rounder, makes what I believe was like his third career start in the majors, pitches a complete game shutout. 4 hits, no runs, 1 walk to 4 strikeouts, 105 pitches. Not only does he almost get a no-hitter, he almost gets a Maddux in like his fourth career start, in not just for Philadelphia, in the majors. One, is it fair that Philly just kind of keeps seeming to get every single break here? And at this point, they have to be considered probably the World Series favorite in both leagues, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think a little bit of your Braves fan came out there asking if it's fair, but no, it's true. You look at it, and they just got over an injury. Well, Ranger Suarez heading to the IL. I thought there was going to be some question marks of what moving forward. Are they going to add another piece at the deadline because of that? And then they go out with this hometown kid, this youngster, Tyler Phillips, and he gets this complete game. I mean, he was outstanding. I got the chance to watch. That was probably the first full game that I watched the Phillies this year because of the scheduling that happened with MLB this year. That was the first game that I had on like major with audio this season. And I picked a good one. Apparently he was fantastic with ground balls. He forced the ground balls. His sweeper is very impressive. And he trusts his sinker too, which you can tell. And you mentioned, Lindsay, this is only his third start, 1.80 ERA. I think his expected ERA is still only below 3. He's doing a lot of impressive things with the baseball. I'm excited to see what he can do moving forward. I think he's actually the real deal. Now, that's unfortunate for you because he's on the Phillies in the NL East. But when you look at what he's done, as you mentioned, 71 strikes on 105 pitches, that's really, really impressive. And I think we're going to see more from this guy. Maybe not more complete games, maybe not a Maddux, but I think we're going to see something maybe when we get to the playoffs that he has a pretty huge role for this team in October.
Yeah, and him being able to step in for Ranger Suarez, I think, is big because the Phillies were one of the few teams where all four of their, or the top of their rotation, their four guys up there, Nola, Wheeler, Ranger Suarez, Christopher Sanchez, the four of them had all started at least 20 games. And the highest ERA of that group was Aaron Nola's 3.44. Three of them had triple-digit wins, right? Taijuan Walker started the year injured, came back on the IL right now. Spencer Turnbull's on the IL right now. This is the first real rotation issue that the Phillies have had all season. They've been remarkably healthy, even their position player injuries. You look at Bryce Harper, missed barely over 10 days. Kyle Schwarber missed barely over 10 days. They did miss Trey Turner for a little while. Edmundo Sosa played out of his mind while he was out. They lost JT Realmuto for a little while. He's now back and is starting to heat back up after missing some time with a knee issue. And so, been remarkably healthy. Let's see if they can keep it up. I do think Tyler Phillips is going to play an outsized role because of the Suarez injury, because of Taijuan being out, because of Turnbull being out. If the Phillies want to be able to go ahead and put the division away versus letting Atlanta and the Mets hang around from between now and the end of the season. Just a few minutes left in the show. I want to do a new thing here. Quick pitch. We're going to kind of go through some rapid fire, a couple topics that happened yesterday. I guess we got 5 here. First one, trades made from a couple different teams. The Phillies made a trade. The Phillies made 2. They got Carlos Estevez for George Clausen and Samuel Adegiri, 2 breakout pitching prospects. This is the reason you have to look at updated prospect rankings, everybody. These were top 10 quality guys. MLB Pipeline has not updated yet, but these are 2 top 10 quality guys for a reliever. And then Austin Hayes for Sir Anthony Dominguez and Christian Pache. To me, not a huge price to pay to get a right-handed hitting outfielder for that outfield mix. Real quick, what's your thoughts on those trades? Were those the best ones they could have made, or was there someone better?
Yeah, Estevez, I think, is the best one you could make for the relievers. I mean, I think he's going to fit perfectly for when you scream Philly bullpen. I feel like he's going to be fantastic for them. He's going to probably turn into the ninth inning guy, probably become your closer. And I like Austin Hayes, too. I think right off the bat when he got traded, he struggled a little bit this season in Baltimore. He is a former All-Star. We know that he can do great things for the team. I think he was having struggles finding at-bats with all the youngsters coming up in Baltimore. He kind of threw a little bit of shade to Baltimore when he is moving over, saying he thinks that he's on a better spot to win the World Series. He might not be wrong, as we mentioned, with the National League. The National League is a lot less tougher, too. There's no parity between these two this year. The magic number to get in the playoffs in the National League, Lindsay, 87 for the National League. Right now, 107 for the American League.
Wow, absolutely wild. Okay, you are the managing editor of InsideTheCardinals.com, so I want to talk to you about this real quick. Paul Goldschmidt walked it off on Sunday to avoid the Cardinals being swept. A day and a half out from the trade deadline, is this a playoff team as it currently stands, and what direction should they take at the deadline?
I want to say yes so bad. I really do, because of the way that they've had over the last couple of the months and how they've stepped up. The second half has really showed me some otherwise. But I have to say no. And the reason behind that is the pitching. The pitching is too old. When you look at this pitching, Lindsay, there's not anything where you can count at 1, 2, 3 and say those are someone who's going to be fantastic in the playoffs. That's a great pitching rotation, especially when you look at the rest of the National League and you go up against the Dodgers, the Phillies, even the Braves with their injuries. I'm just not impressed. If this team makes the playoffs, I don't see them getting past the wild card round. Is that good enough for you, John Mozeliak? Is that good enough for you, Cardinals fans, after making it or missing it last season? I don't think it should be. I personally think that you should go ahead and take a look at this really good seller's market that's happening right now. Maybe get rid of some of your rental players, maybe get rid of some of your older guys, and look at this young core that you have of Mason Wynn, Brandon Donovan, Nolan Gorman, and improve them for the future. That's where I think you're at. That's where I think you should do.
More Christian's Cardinals takes InsideTheCardinals.com.
All right, I got one for you, okay? Let's go to your side. Braves today, that's you. The Braves miss out on Zach Eflin. Okay, he goes over and goes to a different team. That
Baltimore,
was a piece, Baltimore. That was a piece that you thought that could be a potential pick for the Atlanta Braves, and now you got injury concerns of Reynaldo Lopez that happened on this weekend. So, what do you think the direction of Alex Anthopoulos should be this Tuesday at the deadline? Should they still be aggressive?
Alex Anthopoulos has to get a starter now, and I think this was something you were previously. I was saying you had to find a starter. But you had to find a starter that had control in 2025. That's why I liked Eflin so much, because you're going to have Max Fried going to free agency. Charlie Morton is going to free agency and also old. He turns 41 right after the season ends. And so I still think you have to find a starter. But yes, you have to find a guy with multiple years of control. Now, we're going to get an update sometime on Monday about the MRI that Lopez got last night. He flew back to Atlanta for imaging and everything. That's never a great sign. You have a forearm tightness, they fly you back from the road trip. But depending on the update, either way, I still think you have to get a starting pitcher with control in 2025. They need a corner outfielder still. I could see a package deal with the Rockies. Charlie Blackmon, bring him home. He went to Georgia Tech. And Cal Quantrill, who is a dog, ask Reese McGuire about that. And then two, has control for 2025 as well. So you got to go get a guy with multiple years of control. Either way, even if Lopez is going to be back in 3 weeks, you got to go get a guy with multiple years of control.
You can find more of Lindsay's work on BravesToday.com.
Yeah. All right. Xavier Edwards of the Miami Marlins steps in to lead off after Jazz Chisholm gets moved, hits for the cycle last night. This is a guy, he got an opportunity to play shortstop because Tim Anderson was DFA'd. He got an opportunity to lead off once you saw Jazz move to New York. Is he breaking out? Is he going to be part of the core of the next competitive Marlins team?
Man, there's no reason for him not to be. When you look at the rest of the team right now and who they have, he has a prime position to step up and be that guy. I mean, really, there's no other guy right now on that roster. Xavier Edwards has the chance to do that. I love that the second cycle in franchise history, he does it with his first major league home run as well. There was a cool stat that came out on social media saying that both cycles, both 2023 last year with Luis Arraez and Xavier Edwards this year, came when they hit their first home run of the season. Luis Arraez hit his first home run of the season last year when he hit his cycle as well. Now there's a lot of things going on. What's going to happen with Xavier Edwards? First thing you got to look out to, Lindsay, is his walk-up song. Is he going to bring out X Gonna Give It To You finally? Is that going to come out now that he's hit his home run? I think that's the next thing you got to pay attention to. If he does, yeah, then I think he is the real deal.
Nice. Like that. Absolutely like that.
Hey, Senga got injured with New York Mets. I know that there were some issues going on with the NL East. You know, lots of injuries happening this past weekend. Senga just comes back. He has some fantastic, he looks good. He looks really good. The Mets are stepping up. You even got radio personalities telling you that the wild card is over. Well, since that tweet came out, I forgot who it was now, but since that tweet came out, the Mets haven't won a single game. They wound up splitting with the Atlanta Braves. Senga's now out for the year, as what is mentioned. A lot of issues with New York Mets. What do they do moving forward? And what happens with Senga?
Yeah, so shout out Sal Licata.
There he is.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, Senga, 5 1/3 innings, 2 hits, 2 runs. One walk to 9 strikeouts. Calf injury, trying to field his position, coming off the mound. He is out for the regular season, so he is done. You're going to have to go get a starter. You've been kind of carried by Luis Severino. He's 7-3 in 20 starts. Another team, 3 guys have made 20 starts. Severino, Jose Quintana, Sean Manaea. David Peterson stepped up. Christian Scott was in there. He's on the IL right now. Tyler McGill's been up and down, making starts, filling in. And outside of that, Jose Buttos made 7. Adrian Hauser made 7, was DFA'd. You've got to go get another starter. And I think that's simply because some of these guys have been playing through injury, or I'm sorry, are coming back from injury, and you're going to have workload concerns. It feels like this Mets team, the way the offense is hit, the way Lindor has raked, is a postseason team. They are a contender to win a wild card spot. You got to have another starter who you can feel confident throwing in game 3 of the postseason if you need to, because you've got to get there. And you got to go get quality simply because you haven't had to use your starting pitching depth. You also haven't felt great about your starting pitching depth. They signed Julio Teheran, gave him 1 start and DFA'd him. Joey Lucchesi got 1 start. Like, they haven't felt good about their depth. You got to go find more guys.
Last thing, will we get 3 NL East teams in the playoffs this year?
Ooh. It's possible. It all depends on how aggressive Atlanta is at the deadline.
Good call.
Yeah. All right. Do us a favor. Like this video. Subscribe to the channel. We're going to have a trade deadline final look at the big board tomorrow, as well as talk about some of the deals that are already done. But in the meantime, I'm Lindsey Crosby. You can find me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. You can find Christian on Twitter, Christian S. Rao. All of his writing, InsideTheCardinals.com, managing editor for the Cardinals, as well as Across Athlon Sports. I'm at BravesToday.com, covering the Atlanta Braves and all across Athlon Sports. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.